Shop class as Soulcraft. An inquiry into the value of work. Author, Matthew B. Crawford. Those of us who sit in an office often feel a lack of connection to the material world, a sense of loss, and find it difficult to say exactly what we do all day. Here, we seek to restore the honor of the manual trades as a life worth choosing. It is a call for self-reliance and a moving reflection on how we can live concretely in an ever more abstract world. Diminishing creativity. A decline in tool use represents a shift in our relation to our own stuff. More passive and more dependent. Manual competence is an ideal that is timeless, but finds little accommodation today. Neither as workers nor as consumers are we much called upon to exercise such competence, and merely to recommend its cultivation is to risk the scorn of those who take themselves to be the most hard-headed. Meaningful work, self-reliance. With hard economic times looming, we want to become frugal. Frugality requires some measure of self-reliance, the ability to take care of your own stuff. But the new interest in self-reliance seems to have arisen before the spectre of hard times. Frugality may be only a thin economic rationalization for a movement that really answers to a deeper need. We want to feel that our world is intelligible, so we can be responsible for it. This seems to require that the provenance of our things be brought closer to home. Many people are trying to recover a field of vision that is basically human in scale, and extricate themselves from dependence on the obscure forces of a global economy. This longing for responsibility that many people experience in their home lives may be responsive to changes in the work world, where the experience of individual agency has become elusive. Agency versus autonomy. There seems to be a tension between a certain kind of agency and a certain kind of autonomy, and this is worth thinking about. Bodily involvement with the machines we use entails a kind of agency, yet the decline of such involvement is precisely development that increases autonomy. When a mechanic tried to learn how he can turn from being an amateur in his work to a professional, he was invited by a professional mechanic to visit his shop. Over the next 6 months, he spent a long time learning. He provided an example of a life that was enviable to many others. He then bought some tools he needed and went into the business of fixing motorcycles. His plan was to start small, working out of his garage. But soon he met a friend who had a line on some warehouse space that could be had for cheap rent. They went in on it together. His share of the rent was $100 per month. He used new methods in his new business. He kept a logbook in the shop, a sort of diary that serves a number of purposes. It is a record of bikes taken in, work done, and lessons learned. Sometimes he drew pictures to understand mechanical situations. He measured various tolerances when rebuilding a clutch. For example, he listed them next to the wear limits specified in the service manual. He recorded the time he spent on each task and the money spent on parts. The book served as a rough draft for the service ticket he eventually writes for the customer. Handwork can be more stable and fulfilling than office work. The current educational regime is based on a certain view about the important kind of knowledge, knowing that as opposed to knowing how. This corresponds to universal knowledge versus the kind that comes from individual experience. Such knowledge aspires to a view that gets the true nature of things, because it isn't conditioned by circumstances of the viewer. It can be transmitted through speech or writing without the loss of meaning, and expounded by the generic self that need not have any prerequisite experiences. Occupations based on universal, propositional knowledge are more prestigious, but they are also the kind that face competition from the whole world as soft and theoretical learning becomes more widely disseminated in the global economy. Practical know-how, on the other hand, is always tied to the experience of a particular person. It can't be downloaded, it can only be lived. The need for diverse knowledge. To regard universal knowledge as the whole of knowledge is to take no account of embodiment and purposiveness, those features of actual thinkers who are always in particular situations. Experienced firefighters know when to flee a burning building. It is not uncommon to leave moments before one collapses. When asked about how they know exactly when to leave, they fall back on ideas like a sixth sense. The fact that firefighters' intuition strikes us as somehow otherworldly is a good indication that our understanding of how our minds grasp the world must be incomplete. The things we know best are the ones we contend with in some realm of our regular practice. The way we come to know a hammer is not by staring at it, but by grabbing hold of it and using it. This is a deep point about our apprehension of the world in general. The way things actually show up for us is not as mere objects without context, but as equipment for action, like the hammer. The value of failure. Those who struggle academically experience failure all the time, but the praising of gifted students for being smart by parents and teachers has a far more pernicious effect, especially when such praise is combined with the grade inflation and soft curriculum that are notorious at elite schools. A student can avoid hard sciences and foreign languages and get a degree without ever having the unambiguous experience of being wrong. Self-reliance is to be the master of your own stuff, which requires a basic intelligibility to our possessions. In their principles of operation, in their logic of repair and maintenance, in all those ways that a material object can make itself fully manifested to us, so we can be responsible for it. Being viewed from a wider angle, self-reliance is a sad doctrine, a consolation for the collapse of institutions of mutual care. Pensions routinely fail, as do marriages. One bravely writes a living will so as not to be a burden on others. Family bonds give way to social security, which in turn gives way to the individual retirement account. To fill the void that comes with isolation and give it a positive case, we posit the ideal of the sovereign itself, unencumbered by attachments to others and radically free. In sum, to live wakefully is to live in full awareness of this, our human situation. To live well is to reconcile ourselves to it and try to realize whatever excellence we can. For this, some economic conditions are more favorable than others. When the concept of work is removed from the scene of its execution, we're divided against one another, and each against himself, for thinking is inherently bound up with doing, and it is in rational activity together with others that we find our peculiar satisfaction.